Chapter 39. For the best, and we want no nonsense, you and one. Dear George, I feel more than I say, and if I do not speak more plainly, you will understand what is behind after all I have hinted. I can promise you that you will not like me less upon knowing me better. Hope ever. I would give up a good deal for you. Goodbye. Apostrophe, this brought Somerset some cheerfulness, and a good deal of gloom. He silently reproached her, who was apparently so independent, for lacking independence in such a vital matter. Perhaps it was mere sex, perhaps it was peculiar to a few, that her independence and courage, like Cleopatra's, failed her occasionally at the last moment. One curious impression which had often haunted him now returned with redoubled force. He could not see himself as the husband of Paula Power in any likely future. He could not imagine her his wife. People were apt to run into mistakes in their presentiments. But though he could picture her as queening it over him, as avowing her love for him unreservedly, even as compromising herself for him, he could not see her in a state of domesticity with him. Telegrams being commanded, to the telegraph he repaired. When, after 2 days, an immediate wish to communicate with her led him to dismiss vague conjecture on the future situation. His first telegram took the following form. I give up the letter writing. I will part with anything to please you but yourself. Your comfort with your relative is the first thing to be considered. Not for the world do I wish you to make divisions within doors. Yours. Apostrophe, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday passed, and on Saturday a telegram came in reply. I can fear, grieve at, and complain of nothing, having your nice promise, to consider my comfort always. Apostrophe, apostrophe, this was very pretty, but it admitted little. Such short messages were in themselves poor substitutes for letters, but their speed and easy frequency were good qualities which the letters did not possess. 3 days later he replied. You do not once say to me, home. Would such a strange accident as my arrival disturb you much? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she replied rather quickly. I am indisposed to answer you too clearly. Keep your heart strong. 'Tis a censorious world. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the vagueness there shown made Somerset peremptory, and he could not help replying somewhat more impetuously than usual. Why do you give me so much cause for anxiety? Why treat me to so much mystification? Say once, distinctly, that what I have asked is given. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he awaited for the answer, 1 day, 2 days, a week, but none came. It was now the end of March, and when Somerset walked of an afternoon by the river and pool in the lower part of the grounds, his ear newly greeted by the small voices of frogs, and toads and other creatures who had been torpid through the winter, he became doubtful and uneasy that she alone should be silent in the awakening ear. He waited through a second week, and there was still no reply. It was possible that the urgency of his request had tempted her to punish him, and he continued his walks, to, fro, and around, with as close an ear to the undertones of nature, and as attentive an eye to the charms of his own art, as the grand passion would allow. Now came the days of battle between winter and spring. On these excursions, though spring was to the forward during the daylight, winter would reassert itself at night, and not unfrequently at other moments. Tepid airs and nipping breezes met on the confines of sunshine and shade. Trembling raindrops that were still akin to frost crystals dashed themselves from the bushes as he pursued his way from town to castle. The birds were like an orchestra waiting for the signal to strike up, and color began to enter into the country round. But he gave only a modicum of thought to these proceedings. He rather thought such things as, she can afford to be saucy, and to find a source of blitheness in my love, considering the power that wealth gives her to pick and choose almost where she will. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he was bound to own, however, that one of the charms of her conversation was the complete absence of the note of the heiress from its accents. that, other things equal, her interest would naturally incline to a person bearing the name of de Stancy, was evident from her avowed predilections. His original assumption, that she was a personification of the modern spirit, who had been dropped, like a seed from the bill of a bird, into a chink of medievalism, required some qualification. Romanticism, which will exist in every human breast, as long as human nature itself exists, had asserted itself in her. Veneration for things old, not because of any merit in them, but because of their long continuance, had developed in her, and her modern spirit was taking to itself wings and flying away. Whether his image was flying with the other was a question which moved him all the more deeply now that her silence gave him dread of an affirmative answer. For another 7 days he stoically left in suspension all forecasts of his possibly grim fate in being the employed, and not the beloved. The week passed. He telegraphed. There was no reply. He had sudden fears for her personal safety, and resolved to break her command by writing. Stancy Castle, April 13. Dear Paula, are you ill or in trouble? It is impossible in the very unquiet state you have put me into by your silence, that I should abstain from writing. Without affectation, you sorely distress me, and I think you would hardly have done it could you know what a degree of anxiety you cause. Why, Paula, do you not write or send to me? What have I done, that you should treat me like this? Do write, if it is only to reproach me. I am compelled to pass the greater part of the day in this castle, which reminds me constantly of you, and yet eternally lacks your presence. I am unfortunate indeed, that you have not been able to find half an hour during the last month, to tell me at least, that you are alive. You have always been ambiguous, it is true, but I thought I saw encouragement in your eyes. Encouragement certainly was in your eyes, and who would not have been deluded by them, and have believed them sincere? Yet what tenderness can there be in a heart that can cause me pain so willfully? There may, of course, be some deliberate scheming on the part of your relations to intercept our letters, but I cannot think it. I know that the housekeeper has received a letter from your aunt this very week, in which she incidentally mentions that all are well, and in the same place as before. How then can I excuse you? Then write, Paula, or at least telegraph, as you proposed. Otherwise I am resolved to take your silence as a signal, to treat your fair words as wind, and to write to you no more. ...3. He dispatched the letter, and half an hour afterwards felt sure that it would mortally offend her. But he had now reached a state of temporary indifference, and could contemplate the loss of such a tantalizing property with reasonable calm. In the interim of waiting for a reply he was one day walking to Markton, when, passing Myrtle Villa, he saw Sir William de Stancy ambling about his garden path and examining the crocuses that palisaded its edge. Sir William saw him, and asked him to come in. Somerset was in the mood for any diversion from his own affairs, and they seated themselves by the drawing-room fire. I am much alone now, said Sir William, and if the weather were not very mild, so that I can get out into the garden every day, I should feel it a great deal. You allude to your daughter's absence? And my son's. Strange to say, I do not miss her, so much as I miss him. She offers to return at any moment, but I do not wish to deprive her of the advantages of a little foreign travel with her friend. Always, Mr. Somerset, give your spare time to foreign countries, especially those which contrast with your own in topography, language, and art. That's my advice to all young people of your age. Don't waste your money on expensive amusements at home. Practice the strictest economy at home, to have a margin for going abroad. Economy, which Sir William had never practiced, but to which, after exhausting all other practices, he now raised an altar, as the Athenians did to the unknown god, was a topic likely to prolong itself on the baronet's lips, and Somerset contrived to interrupt him, by asking, Captain DeStancy too has gone? Has the artillery then left the barracks? No, said Sir William. But my son has made use of his leave in running over to see his sister at Nice. The current of quiet meditation in Somerset changed to a busy whirl at this reply. That Paula should become indifferent to his existence from a sense of superiority, physical, spiritual, or social, was a sufficiently ironical thing, but that she should have relinquished him, because of the presence of a rival lent commonplace dreariness to her cruelty. Sir William, noting nothing, continued in the tone of clever childishness which characterized him. It is very singular how the present situation has been led up to by me. Policy, and policy alone, has been the rule of my conduct for many years past, and when I say that I have saved my family by it, I believe time will show that I am within the truth. I hope you don't let your passions outrun your policy, as so many young men are apt to do. Better be poor and politic than rich and headstrong. That's the opinion of an old man. However, I was going to say that it was purely from policy that I allowed a friendship to develop between my daughter and Miss Power, and now events are proving the wisdom of my course. Straws show how the wind blows, and there are little signs that my son Captain DeStancy will return to Stancy Castle by the fortunate step of marrying its owner. I say nothing to either of them, and they say nothing to me. But my wisdom lies in doing nothing to hinder such a consummation, despite inherited prejudices. Somerset had quite time enough to rein himself in during the old gentleman's locution, and the voice in which he answered was so cold and reckless that it did not seem his own. But how will they live happily together when she is a dissenter, and a radical, and a new light, and a neo-Greek, and a person of red blood, while Captain DeStancy is the reverse of them all? I anticipate no difficulty on that score, said the baronet. My son's star lies in that direction, and, like the Magi, he is following it without trifling with his opportunity. You have skill in architecture, therefore you follow it. My son has skill in gallantry, and now he is about to exercise it profitably. May nobody wish him more harm in that exercise than I do. Said Somerset fervently. A stagnant moodiness of several hours which followed his visit to Myrtle Villa resulted in a resolve to journey over to Paula the very next day. He now felt perfectly convinced that the inviting of Captain DeStancy to visit them at Nice was a second stage in the scheme of Paula's uncle, the premature announcement of her marriage having been the first. The roundness and neatness of the whole plan could not fail to recommend it to the mind which delighted in putting involved things straight, and such a mind Abner Power seemed to be. In fact, the felicity, in a politic sense, of pairing the captain with the heiress furnished no little excuse for maneuvering to bring it about, so long as that maneuvering fell short of unfairness, which Mr. Powers could scarcely be said to do. The next day was spent in furnishing the builders with such instructions as they might require for a coming week or 10 days, and in dropping a short note to Paula, ending as follows. I am coming to see you. Possibly you will refuse me an interview. Never mind, I am coming yours, G. Somerset. The morning after that he was up and away. Between him and Paula stretched 900 miles by the line of journey that he found it necessary to adopt, namely, the way of London, in order to inform his father of his movements, and to make one or two business calls. The afternoon was passed in attending to these matters, the night in speeding onward, and by the time that 9 o'clock sounded next morning through the sunless and leaden air of the English Channel coasts, he had reduced the number of miles on his list by 200, and cut off the sea from the impediments between him and Paula. On awakening from a fitful sleep in the gray dawn of the morning following, he looked out upon Lyons, quiet enough now. The citizens unaroused to the daily round of bread winning, and enveloped in a haze of fog. 650 miles of his journey had been got over. There still intervened 250 between him and the end of suspense. When he thought of that, he was disinclined to pause, and pressed on by the same train, which set him down at Marseille at midday. Here he considered. By going on too nice, that afternoon he would arrive at too late an hour, to call upon her the same evening. It would therefore be advisable to sleep in Marseille, and proceed the next morning to his journey's end, so as to meet her in a brighter condition than he could boast of today. This he accordingly did, and leaving Marseille the next morning about 8, found himself at Nice early in the afternoon. Now that he was actually at the center of his gravitation, he seemed even further away from a feasible meeting with her than in England. While afar off, his presence at Nice had appeared to be the one thing needful for the solution of his trouble, but the very house front seemed now to ask him what right he had there. Unluckily, in writing from England, he had not allowed her time to reply before his departure, so that he did not know what difficulties might lie in the way of her seeing him privately. Before deciding what to do, he walked down the Avenue de la Guerre to the promenade between the shore and the Jardin Public, and sat down to think. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.